Morning, everybody. How are y'all doing? Y'all ready for Christmas? Got all your gifts out? Got all of them? Hey, just before we begin, I just want to let you guys, especially you guys, know that I believe Walgreens is open till like midnight on Christmas Eve. So that's a free service announcement there for all you men out there who need to buy some cologne or some perfume or something over there, some bath lotions or whatever. Hey, but seriously, we've been in this series called God With Us. And really, this series is about those times in our lives where we feel like God isn't with us. Those times in our lives where we may feel alone, isolated, and with that feeling a sense of depression or sadness, a deep sense of sadness maybe, perhaps because of something that's happened to us or something that's happened to somebody that we really care about and we really love. It's those times in our lives where we feel like we're in a dark place because we feel a sense of stress and anxiety over, you know, fear of what's going to happen in our lives. Maybe there's something that's going on in our lives that's bringing great fear of what's going to happen. How's this going to end up? Or maybe it could be something that's going on even in our culture that creates that kind of stress by which you wonder and you ask the question inside of you. God, where are you? Are you with me? You know, is there a God? And so this series is about when we find ourselves in that space. And we talked about the first week out is that if you feel that way, if you feel alone, then you need to know that you're not alone in feeling alone. We've all been there before. We've all felt and experienced that sense of darkness in our lives. The question is what do we do with that? Do we just kind of live with it? Live with a sense of low-grade stress and anxiety and depression in our lives as we just kind of go through life and just kind of accept it as kind of our new normal? Do we try to buck up and become strong and pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and deal with this thing and try to make our way and fight our way through this? Or do we lean into God? Do we patiently follow him and let him, you know, move in our lives? How do we work through that peace in our lives? And it's very important for us to understand how God moves in our lives, because it's not God's desire for you to live your life feeling anxious. And it's not God's desire for you to live under the sense of dread and despair. And so this morning, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how God goes about doing his breakthrough in his life. You see, these issues that I'm talking about this morning isn't something that's unique to you. It's not unique to me. These issues are not unique to us Americans in the 21st century. These feeling of depression or anxiety or feeling like we're disconnected from God is something that's been, humanity has been dealing with almost from the very, very get-go. That's why a lot of times we really encourage you guys to read through Scripture. Now, I get it. When you read the Bible, there are names in there that seem really odd and strange. There's places that you're not familiar with, and there's cultures that are very different from yours. And so sometimes we can get really hung up on that. But the more you kind of dig in, the more you begin to realize that there is so much humanity in here. There's so much of our own experience in here that our experience isn't really that much different from those people who lived thousands of years ago. Maybe we wear different clothes, maybe we have different cultures, but man, inwardly, the things that we worry about, the things that we are depressed about and sad about are really very much the same thing. You see, even before Jesus was born, the nation of Israel was going through this very dark space and period and time in their lives. It all started even before this, but a lot of it came in this crescendo around 586 BC. There was this foreign government, this foreign kingdom that came into Israel and completely decimated all of Israel. Went to the capital city of Jerusalem, highly fortified, had the temple that Solomon built and everything there, and they just demolished it. They demolished the walls, they destroyed the homes, they destroyed the temple, which was the center of their worship and center of their national identity. And it was all gone. Just like that, it was gone. And they took all their people and they took all their high class and intellectual people, and they marched them into a whole different country, foreign language, different culture, in order for their sons and daughters to go and serve this kingdom that just decimated them. And then that wasn't it. It wasn't just ended from there. Another kingdom came after that one. And then another kingdom came after that one, and Israel, for hundreds of years, was held under the captivity of these foreign oppressors. And then finally, you know, we see maybe a glimmer of hope. There was a group of people that rebelled against, at this time, was these Greek leaders. They rebelled against them, and they were able to gain some independence. They cleansed the temple and began to worship God again in the holy way in this temple. It's celebrated this time of year. It's called Hanukkah, this period of time. And then what we see from that, we kind of see, oh, things are going well. But then they begin fighting against each other. And there were power struggles over who was going to be the leader and who was going to, you know, lead this thing. And there was civil war, and it got to a place where there was a group of them that asked the Romans to come in and step in and help out with this civil war. And the Romans were more than glad to help out. And so the Romans came in, and they put their own king in that area in Israel to rule. And there was fighting amongst that until a point where the Roman Senate had an election, and they elected this guy to become the new client king. What's a client king? A client king is somebody who's a king over a certain area on behalf of the Roman government. And so the Roman government elected this guy named Herod. You may have heard his name before. Sometimes he's called Herod the Great, to become the king of Judea and to rule that land on behalf of the Roman emperor. And what he would do is he would create stability, and he would also create an environment by which there would be high taxation, by which there would be nice, good flow of income going to Rome, where Rome can continue to build its army to keep the Israelites oppressed. That's their reality. That's their dark space that they were in. But not only this, but this client king, this guy named Herod, he comes from a lineage who were foreigners. His father converted to Judaism, but Herod was not really a follower of God. He was a follower of himself. He was about his own self-interest. He was a political genius in a not so great way. He knew how to leverage power. He knew who to suck up to, the Roman emperors or whoever was in power at Rome. He also knew how to completely and utter decimate and destroy anybody who would even get in his way or try to usurp his power. He had his wife killed. He had his two kids killed. In fact, the Roman emperor at the time, who was Caesar Augustus, said this of Herod. He said, it's better to be Herod's pig than to be Herod's son. And so here's this guy that if you were an Israelite and you're living under his kingdom, you would sit there and you'd go, he is a despot. He is a moral just pig. He's just not the right kind of leader that you would expect or hope to see for your nation. But at the same time, though, Herod built all of these big palaces and facilities and things like that, where there was also an economic engine that gave jobs to a lot of people. And not only that, but he also helped build up the second temple there, and to a magnificent, huge temple. So as an Israelite, you're confused. You know this guy is just morally bankrupt. But at the same time, he gives us jobs, and he continues to build up the temple for us to go to worship. And so they're just living in this weird, you know, place of oppression from Rome, oppression over this kingly guy who's also very worldly, but yet he also knows how to kind of keep the people at bay to make them happy and all of this. But if you were a Jew that really wanted to follow God, you would be going, God, where are you? Was this your plan? Is King Herod really your plan of fulfillment, of bringing us back to you and bringing us back to a place of prosperity and of peace? Obviously, they would have said no. And so if you were a Jew and you were a devout follower of God, you would have been a person of the scriptures. And you would have read through the Hebrew scriptures, what we call our Old Testament. And if you were had the opportunity to have access to these scrolls, you would open up a scroll, one like this one right here. This scroll is a beautiful piece of treasure that we have. This scroll is a scroll of Isaiah, what we call the book of Isaiah. It's not really a book, it's a scroll of the sayings and the writings of Isaiah that God spoke into the life of Israel through this guy. This scroll dates to 125 BC. This scroll may have even been being read at the same time that Jesus was being born there in Israel. So 125 years before Jesus was even born, there is a copyist who's copying down from one scroll to this scroll the words of Isaiah. And I can't help but wonder what it was like for that person, that scribe, who is writing in these Hebrews, these very words, especially the ones that I highlighted for you in red. Down there on the bottom corner there, the smaller one, is, we would say, is Isaiah 7, verse 14. They don't have verses and chapters, as you can see. There's nothing there. It's just the writings of Isaiah. So if you think about it, the scribe is writing through these things, and he comes to this place. And I wonder what it was like when he wrote these words. All right, then, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Look, the virgin will conceive a child, and she will give birth to a son and call him Emmanuel. 125 BC, right there. And I can imagine if he was writing and continuing to write through there and writing down, and he gets to this place right here. We call this Isaiah 9, verse 6. And I wonder what he was like thinking about in this captivity, in this whirlwind of wondering, where are you, God? You know, here you gave us all these problems. Where are you? And then he begins to write these Hebrew words there that translated into English says, and a lot of you have heard these words before, for a child is born to us, a son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The passionate commitment of the Lord of Heaven's armies will make this happen. And I can't imagine when the scribe dealing with the situation, his life situation, and reading these things as he's going through this, or the future generations who are unrolling this massive scroll and going through these words again of Isaiah and reading these things and basically saying, God, here's your promises that you made to us through your prophet Isaiah. And you said it will come. Where is it? And I can imagine that they probably felt the exact same way of these just beautiful lyrics that come from this Christmas song that we sing, O Come, Emmanuel. Like, we tend to sing this song very nice, like it really pretty and really nice. You know, O Come, Emmanuel. You know, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appears. And we sing that and we're like, man, that's so good. It's a beautiful song. But in those days, it was more like, God, where are you? As I'm reading through Isaiah, I read this. Oh, come, Emmanuel. The Prince of Peace, we need peace. Where's the Wonderful Counselor? It's not Herod. Where's our mighty God to bring us back into his presence? Where are you? Oh, come, Emmanuel. And ransom captive Israel. Bring us out of this captivity, God. Geopolitically, emotionally, religiously, bring us out of this that mourns in feeling alone. We feel alone. Oh, come, Emmanuel. You feel this way until the promise is fulfilled, until the Son of God appears. And then something happens. The birth of a boy in a small little town in a small little way. The birth of Jesus. Jesus' birth was brought to us and written down to us by two individuals, a guy named Matthew and a guy named Luke. Matthew was a guy who lived with Jesus every single day for about 3 years, and with his mother Mary would have been a part of that as well. And so I'm sure he spent a lot of time talking to Mary about the birth of Jesus. And then you have another person, Luke. Luke became a Christian later on, a little bit later on. But wanting to help this guy named Theophilus to really understand the things that he had been taught about Jesus, he went to all these eyewitnesses and spent a ton of time researching the life and ministry of Jesus Christ to write everything down in detail to give it to this guy Theophilus so he could be confident of the things that happened, including the birth of Jesus. And so I want to read to you just a passage here that's very well known to all of you, that was recorded to us and passed down to us, beginning with Luke. It's Luke chapter 2. And so at the beginning, verse 1, at the beginning, at the time of the Roman Emperor Augustus, we talked about him before, right? At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. And this was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. Just some little detail there, historical detail. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for this census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea because that's David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. And he took with him Mary, his fiancée, who's now obviously pregnant. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. And she gave birth to her first child, a son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. And that night there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. And suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. And they were terrified. But an angel reassured them. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all people. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the one that God had promised, that he said will make happen. Yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David. And you will recognize him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth lying in a manger." And suddenly the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven. Does it sound like Isaiah? Praising God and saying, "Glory to God highest in heaven, and what? Peace on earth." The peace is coming. The promise that God said will come is coming. God is a God who fulfills his promises. And peace on earth to those with whom God is pleased. And when the angel had returned to heaven, the shepherds said to each other, "Let's go to Bethlehem and see. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." And they hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was the baby lying in the manger. And after seeing him, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the angel had said to them about this child. And all who heard the shepherd's story were astonished. But Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them. The shepherds went back to their flocks, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen. It was just as the angel had told him. It was just as God spoke through Isaiah. And there enters the breakthrough, the beginning of the breakthrough for the nation of Israel. And one of the things that we can learn from this whole little passage here is how God works those breakthroughs in our lives. Because they're the same just as us. And we see throughout life and throughout history that God operates pretty much the same way. Sometimes we don't really recognize it because we look through the lens of our own culture and our own language and things like that. But when it comes down to the heart things, comes inwardly, God tends to work very similar throughout the ages. And one of the things that is important for all of us to understand when it comes to how God does breakthroughs is this. God's breakthrough comes when you least expect it, but it's perfect. Oftentimes when we think about breakthroughs in our lives, they don't come in the timing that we think they should come. And they don't usually come the way that, you know, at that moment that we think it should happen. Have you ever thought about that? "God, where are you? God, I can't deal with this right now. This is bad timing, God." You ever had a conversation with God about his bad timing? See, a lot of times it happens, and God's timing for his breakthrough and his work in our lives tends to happen when we least expect it. But here's the deal, guys. It is perfect. The way that God works is perfect. We don't usually see it because we are filtering our situation through our own limited mind. He is working through his situation through his sovereign, all-wise mind. In fact, if we go back to Luke chapter 2, verse 1 through 4, we see how God begins to work this breakthrough in the life of Israel. At that time, verse 1, at that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus, all right, first of all, you got to understand, here's a guy, the Roman Emperor lived 1,000 miles away from Jerusalem and Israel. 1,000 miles away. Back in the ancient times, that's 20 days of being in a boat ride to get there. He's a long way away. The fastest boats in Rome would take 20 days. It would take him 130 days to go the fastest route on land. 130 days. He is way out there, all by himself. And the Roman emperor really doesn't care about Israel as long as there's no rebellion. If there's no rebellion and everything and the money keeps coming in, who cares about Israel? He doesn't care about their religion. He doesn't care about what they think about God. In fact, the Caesar of Rome was kind of the high priest of the Roman religion. So he doesn't care. But it's amazing that the sovereign God of the universe taps this guy on the shoulder 1,000 miles away to go and make a census. And it's amazing how God will even use somebody 1,000 miles away and use their selfishness to get his good, perfect, beautiful plan set in motion. Because at that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. Why did he want to take a census? Because he wanted to know how many people are out there? He could care less about how many people are out there. He wants to know how many tax-paying people and opportunity for money there is. So you see the sovereign God working behind the scenes to use some guy in a foreign land to start leveraging, you know, the playing out of this human drama of creating the census so he can get more money, by which he uses this to execute his beautiful, perfect plan. So this was the first census that was taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for this census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. So David had to go to Bethlehem. Why? Because that's where he was registered. His family had to, that's where his family registry was from. And we see that way before Jesus was even born in the Hebrew scriptures, that this Messiah was to be born in Bethlehem. So God is working already behind the scenes. Do the Israelites see it? Do they really get it? No, they don't. But they feel at this time is that God has abandoned them, that God doesn't really care about them, but God is working in his perfect movements. And you talk about bad, you know, timing. What about Mary? All right? So you would think that if God is a sovereign God, that this lady who was impregnated really by God himself now has to go a 100-mile walking journey to Bethlehem around her 9th month. You talk about somebody who could say, well, wait a minute, God, this is your timing? This is really bad timing. It's my 9th month here. And so I got to take this trek all the way down to Bethlehem. Have you ever been in that situation in your life where you just go, God, where are you? Or God, this is really bad timing here. But we see that God is working, and he's working for his good purpose. Mary may have gone, wow, this really wasn't what I planned. This wasn't really what I really wanted to do, is to travel a 30-hour walk to Bethlehem while I'm 9 months pregnant. A lot of you ladies, you know, I know having 3 kids that when you get to the 9th month, you have a hard time sleeping. You just want this baby to be delivered, let alone, hey, let's go on a 30-hour trek up and down mountains. That sounds amazing. That's bad timing, right? But she had to go. Why? Because the Romans would have killed her and her baby. So there's no choice. She's going. Doesn't seem like good timing. But Paul later on wrote this in Romans 5:6. When we were utterly helpless, Christ what? Came at just the right time and died for a sinner. Sometimes we look at it, we go, man, God's timing just doesn't seem right here. But you got to understand, God's working. He's moving. He's moving in the background. But also we need to understand that God's breakthrough a lot of times, even in our lives, and we see this even with the lives of the Israelites, is God's breakthrough comes when in ways that we least expect it as well. It doesn't come the way that we think. You know, the Israelites thought the way of a breakthrough would be this high-powered military leader who would come on the scene and just wipe everybody out and bring everything back into prosperity and peace. Wasn't the way that God worked. And so what you see in Luke, going on with Luke 2, 6 through 7, and while they were there in Bethlehem, she finally made it there, the time came for her baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. You mamas, when you were pregnant, and you dads as well, you moms, when you were pregnant, you know, you thought about your baby's room. You went out, you spent a lot of money, you spent a lot of paint, some of you spent a lot of muscle equity to make that room beautiful. A beautiful, wonderful place. You had a vision in your mind of what this would be like for your child to come into, be born into this world and have this beautiful, wonderful nursery to be in. I don't think this is what Mary envisioned what her firstborn child experience would be like for her. Here she is. She's gone all this way. She knocks on doors. Sorry, there's no place for you. Knock on doors. There's no place for you. I mean, it's first of all, you can sit there. God, you know, I thought I was highly favored. I thought I was your woman here, and this is really bad. And think about it from the sense of that, who are the other people in Bethlehem? These are other people from the same lineage as Joseph. And so even family members won't even give this pregnant woman a way in. Most of them were probably thinking, hey, honey, hey, we all got life issues. We all got life problems. You need to, no, we're here. You go figure that out. And so you even just see just this, you know, this whole thing that Mary had to deal with wasn't the way that she envisioned, wasn't the way that she pictured it. That the only place that she could find to give birth to her firstborn son is not a highly sterilized environment with highly, incredibly, amazingly, you know, trained individuals. It was in a stinky little stable where the only place to put her new firstborn baby is in a feeding trough. That's as good as it got for her. Now, I get it, man. When we're in those places, man, it's easy for us to go, God, where are you? This isn't what I envisioned. This isn't what it was supposed to be like. It may be even if you're following God, you may even go, God, I thought I was following you and doing all these things. Why is this happening? And so we struggle with these things over with God. But you need to understand, and hopefully you're encouraged, that God is working. God is working, even when it may not look like he is. And then you begin to see God really break through. And even when he breaks through in a very different way. So in verse 8, that night there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. And suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them, and they were terrified. So think about this. When God decides to enter into the darkness, to pierce his light into the darkness, and he sends his angels, he does not go to Jerusalem. He does not go to the high priest. He does not go to the king. He goes to shepherds in a field. Dirty, grungy boys who smell, been around manure and just stinkage and all of that, or who are unclean. God comes into their lives and he says, you know, glory to God in the highest. And he reveals himself to these people. And they see the glory of God. God also works in very different ways. And when he talks about his breakthroughs, sometimes we would think, like in Israel, that God would break through and that he would get a new king because Herod's, will you get new high priest? Because the high priest, well, there's still so much political intrigue in that, that God would just go and eradicate all that, bring all that to new, and everything will be perfectly fine. That's where you need to start. You start from the top and you work your way down. But God always starts the other way around. He starts from the bottom and builds us, what? Up. And so God changes and works in different ways that we work in order for the beautiful, his beautiful glory to happen. I want you to look at this picture real quick with me right here. This is a picture right down below is Bethlehem. Now, what's that humongous hill up there? Looks like a volcano. It's not a volcano, all right? What it is a big mound that was once a little, it was a hill that was made into a huge mound. In fact, they used the dirt from, see where it's flat on the left-hand side? You use that dirt in order to build that big mound. Herod the Great did that. Herod the Great built this huge, big, old mound there. You don't see it anymore because the Romans got ticked at the Israelites and completely decimated his palace around 70 AD. But on top of that thing was a massive palace. It was a symbolic of Herod's greatness, of his power, that at that place, if you were to stand at the top of that and look around, you could see military armies coming miles away, and you would be prepared to take on your enemy at any cost. It is a symbol of power. It is a symbol of what we think of earthly might. But God chose a different type of breakthrough. A little baby, a little boy that was born in a little stable way down below. In the quietness of the night, the quietness of, you know, down below. And so what you see is really interesting because Herod was paranoid. You would see later on that when Herod finds that the Messiah is to be born, when the wise men come and say that the Messiah is to be born in Bethlehem, he gets all paranoid and he goes and he kills every single kid in Bethlehem at a certain age or an under. But Jesus and his parents flee and they go to Egypt. There's no, it's obvious that Herod is a very paranoid person. I mean, he killed his two kids and things like that. So you think about that. He builds that place in order to secure his own authority and power by which he can look out all over the land and be ready for his enemy. But he didn't realize that his enemy was born in a little stable manger way down below in humility. Which is the way that God operates and works in his life. God has a plan and it's perfect and it's beautiful. Now think about it from Mary's perspective again. Was this what Mary envisioned? Was this birth really difficult for her? Man, there's no doubt. I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was horrible. We tend to kind of fantasize this whole birth of Jesus thing. Oh, it's so beautiful and stuff. But those of you mamas, you've given birth, you can probably imagine what the reality probably really was. But let me ask you a question. Through all of that she went through, was God with her? Was God with her? Remember, the angel Gabriel came to her before all of this even happened, said that this was going to happen, and said, greetings, highly favored one. The Lord is what? The Lord is with you. And through all that, I don't know. I don't really know what was going on in her mind, but she may have thought, where are you, God? Where was God in this whole thing while she's going through this? Lord of God, the King of Kings was in her the whole time. The Lord was with her the whole time during this whole trek. She was never alone. I mean, think about that. And when that baby boy was born, what do you think how she felt? I remember, she's going to make me kind of cry, when Kimberly gave birth to our firstborn son, she just started bawling with great joy. Do you think Mary, through all of that stuff, when that baby boy was born, she held that, and that moment of breakthrough of great joy in her life? You see, one of the things about God's breakthroughs in our lives, they're all the same. When we think about God's breakthrough, sometimes we think his breakthrough is about circumstances. We think about, you know, God needs to move some stuff in order for me to break through. But let me tell you this. A true breakthrough from God is always the same. It's been the same since Jesus came into this world as it is today. That the breakthrough that we're looking for in our lives is not the manipulation of God to our circumstances, but is actually the breakthrough is recognizing that God is with us. God loves you. God is with us here, and he's intimately here. The Son of God was inside of Mary. Could she see him? No. Could she probably feel him every once in a while? Yes. And sometimes that's what life is. Sometimes life, it doesn't feel like, or it seems like we can see God. But is he working? Yes. Do sometimes we feel him? Yes. But he's always there. And the ultimate breakthrough in our lives is the recognition of the time in our lives that God is really with me. Through all the years of ministry, I've seen it over and over and over again, where people would come to me and gone through cancer, gone through all sorts of junk like that, and just say, Tyler, I would not wish that on anybody, but I'm so glad I went through that. And I would say, why? Because it was in that moment that I felt the closest to God that I've ever before. A peace that surpasses all understanding. A joy even in the midst of all of this stuff. It was the recognition of the reality that God is with me. I've seen it with people who've gone through bad relational things where their spouse or somebody left them. And they were a wreck and they were a mess. And then until they began to give God a chance and begin to move their hearts and connect it with God and say, Tyler, I don't wish anybody to go through that because that heartbreak was really rough. But I'm so glad I went through it because through that I found that God is with me. That God is with me over and over and over. The breakthroughs and the joys of people's life is the recognition that, man, my God is amazing. And he is with me. Matthew 1:23, look, the virgin will conceive a child and she will give birth to a son and they will call him Emmanuel, which is God with us. He is our breakthrough. Our breakthrough is not a something. Our breakthrough is a someone. And I want to introduce you and have my friend come up. Todd, why don't you come up? I want you to hear Todd's story. Because Todd wants to give you just a little bit of story about what God has been doing in his life, and not only just his life, but also the life of the group of people that he went through Rooted with that really impacted not only his life, but the life of the people that he went through Rooted. And as you listen through his story, you will hear these same things. In fact, we didn't even really talk about these together. These things just kind of come together. Why? Because that's the way God always works. His timing isn't always our timing. His ways isn't always our ways, but you'll see that his breakthrough is always the same. Todd, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us your story.
Good morning. My name is Todd Kasulka. Thank you, Pastor, by the way. So my wife and I moved from California, where I worked for an electrical company for about 28, 29 years, and moved here exactly last December. So we've been here exactly a year now. My company had offered to relocate me and work remotely. Well, I get to Florida, I've sold my home, I bought a new home, and they backed out on it. Well, luckily, I was picked up by another company, a consultant company, did that for a few months, but then I lost that job. So when we first got to River Run here, we were making friends and we were getting to know people. My wife and I wanted to serve, and we're doing that, we're having a good time. But we didn't feel like we were getting the real connection, that looking for that church family that we wanted to be a part of is, I think, what we were still missing. And at the time, when I was working with the other company, I was traveling a lot back and forth from California. And we signed up and looked at doing Rooted in January. And we thought, gosh, you know, I might miss two or three sessions of this Rooted, and maybe now is just not the right time. Well, like I told you, I lost my job. So not that you're going to lose your job if you don't do Rooted, but that was the case for me. So my wife and I both said, you know, I think we should do Rooted, and I think this is something that would be really good for us right now in our lives. So I go to the Rooted session, and we kind of learn more about it, and I'm kind of hesitant. I'm not in a good place. I've kind of lost my job recently, and I just feel like, gosh, I don't know if I really, really want to do this. And I recall something my wife telling me, which was, you know, if we do this, I believe God is telling me that he's going to give us the perfect family and the perfect individuals who are designed just for us, us for them. And I'm like, okay, yeah, okay, good for you. That's wonderful. But I feel like I don't know if I want to do this. So I reach out to Pastor, and we spent, I don't know, about an hour and a half in his office. And I kind of told him all this and just kind of verbal vomit all over him. And Pastor said, well, I think you should pray about it. And I'm thinking, okay, I just gave you an hour and a half and you tell me go home and pray. You know, I could have got that on TV maybe, I don't know. But that's exactly what I did. And I prayed about it and I remember, and I kept going back to what my wife told me. I think God is going to give us the perfect family to do this, and I think that's what we should do. So what are you thinking, honey? And I said, gosh, you know, I don't know. And she said, well, you sure? Because I kind of already told Pastor that we would host a Rooted at our house.
Brilliant, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, which is a perfect way to make sure I'm there every time. So we go through this, and we sign up for Rooted, and we kind of meet our new family. And I'm sure they're looking at us, and we're looking at them. And you're not walking in there going, wow, this is it. This is perfect. You start to grow into it. And we were probably week four, week five or so into this. And I kept falling back to what my wife, Maddie, had told me, which was, God's going to give us this perfect family. And I saw that starting to develop. We went to the retreat, and let me back up just one second. One of the reasons I got there was, as we were learning each other's stories, make sure I get this, and hearing the testimonies, I knew at that moment that God had placed us with exactly what my wife had said, these amazing individuals. And they were designed for us. Pastor talked about breakthroughs and the way God works with us. Some of those breakthroughs come through the people that are put in our lives. And I have to say, those individuals were absolutely some of those breakthroughs for me. So I get to the retreat, and I'm enjoying all of Rooted. I'm watching some of the changes in people's lives and my new family, but I'm still not 100% there in what it's done for me. And I remember the last day I'm being prayed over, and it was a wave of emotion. And all that came through my head was what my wife kept telling me. God is going to give us in this perfect family and these perfect individuals. Now, I don't know if they saw me that way, but I did see them that way. So I would tell you, I didn't say this in the other service, but I'll tell you, if you're thinking about Rooted and you're interested in doing it, please do not hesitate. Go to one of the Rooted meetings, find out what it's about. I believe you're going to love it. If you're on the fence, for me, where I was at a portion during this time, I felt like it was the Holy Spirit tugging on my heart, trying to get me to lean over and do this. And if you're not interested at all, where I also was at one time, I would ask you to stop and reflect and pray. Because God did speak to me. He put me on that fence. And then I came over, and we just had the most amazing time. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Todd. Thank you. So even when you look at it, you know, just telling him, hey, go pray about it. There's a reason why. Because his breakthrough is not my counsel to him. His breakthrough is his time talking to God and let God begin to move that journey into his life. That's where it's at. And so you can see from his story that maybe it wasn't God's timing, God's way for losing his job and timing of doing Rooted, but he decided just that he was going to give God some trust and lean into him and do what he wanted to do in his life. And God really, you know, spoke and moved into Todd's life. But I love what he said there, because I think this is so, 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 so important. Emmanuel does not mean God with me. It means God with what? Us. We're in this together. The beauty is the fact of having God with us together as a family. And that's what God has always envisioned for us, to come together as a people who just enjoy being in his presence. And having other people in our lives is so good, because we need to have other people in our lives to remind us when we forget that God is with us. Would you pray with me? Father, I just thank you so much for your love for us. That, yeah, God, we go through things that just seem so hard and difficult, and we wonder, why in the world are you letting us go through these things? Or your timing's all wrong and all of that, God. But God, you are so smart. You know what's going on in our lives. You see bigger than we see, and you're working out a perfect plan to bring us into your presence, to get us to a place, to maneuver us to a place to realize that our breakthrough is not a something, but a someone. It is you. And so, Father, as we sing this next song, I'm so excited. Joy to the world. Not because the Lord has come, but because the Lord is come. The Lord is present. You are here. You are amongst us. You are with us, God. And so we sing praises to you and glorifying you in recognition of that very, very fundamental, important truth. It's in your Son's name I pray. Amen. Would you stand with me? Let's continue to worship.